Thursday on Seattle's Morning News with Dave Ross. Good morning. I'm Colleen O'Brien. Boy, I remember Hannah Scott's live with us right now. And Hannah, I was just about to introduce you with the latest COVID numbers. And let's see, the state topped 4,000 a day for the first time so far in this wave. But I remember not long ago when we were all, you know, surprised and shocked when we were getting up into the 1,000 or 1,500 range. And now we've got 4,000 cases a day. And it just seems unreal that we're still here a year and a half into this pandemic.
Yes, and it doesn't look like we're going to be not here anytime soon. If you look at the graphs from the state health department, they're just amazing to look at. We have surpassed in every graph, in every area that they monitor, whether that be hospitalizations and cases, all of that kind of thing. We are above where we've ever been. There are new records being set across the board, with the exception of deaths, that those have not surpassed what we've seen in the past yet, is what I hear from medical officials. And as you said, you have 4,101, I believe, was the latest data from state health department on daily cases. That was the first time above 4,000. 567,000 total cases since the start, and 6,600 deaths about. We also had, of course, the first child reported to die from COVID at Seattle Children's Hospital this week. And right now, medical officials saying what they have been, vaccination is going to be what we need to do. We have to get more people vaccinated. Right now, one dose, at least one dose, we're at a little over 73% across the state. For full vaccination across the state, we are at 55%, and that's not good enough.
According that's to it?
The, yep, 55% for both doses, or for full vaccination, what is considered full vaccination.
Why did I think we were better than that?
Because they usually give the number that is 73%, that's with at least one dose, but that's not good enough. That's not enough. Dr. Nate Schlicker, he is the head of our state medical association, also an ER doc down in Tacoma. He says we've got to get more people vaccinated, but right now there's still that opposition that doesn't move.
Well, I think the hard thing is that right now we're trying to straddle that idea of getting back to life and having people make the right decisions themselves rather than the government telling you what to do, right? Most people, I don't think it matters regardless of party, would like to feel like they can make their own decisions and that we don't need government to tell us what to do. The hard thing is that people also feel like this isn't impacting their lives. They don't see firsthand the damage it's doing to the healthcare system unless they're one of the unfortunate people that had a needed surgery that got canceled this week. And that's not any single system. That's every health system in the state.
He says most people he's treating that have COVID who were not fully vaccinated were not people from the anti-vaccine community necessarily. They're people who were busy, who didn't think it really was going to have much of an impact on them. You know, they just didn't get around to it. And he says that's sad because they a lot of times will end up in the ICU. And as we've been saying, more young people are getting this. We're looking at the 25 and under crowd.
Yes, statistically, you may be fine as a young person, but if you're the one person that gets severe COVID or dies from it, it doesn't matter that the population is fine. You're the one person. And we're seeing that. You know, I had a colleague who had a breakthrough case who got pretty sick and had to be hospitalized, you know, despite being young and healthy and, you know, being vaccinated, but early in the pandemic. And the challenge is that, you know, I just try to stress, I've seen too many young people that are really, really sick, getting admitted to the ICU and regretting not having gotten vaccinated. And it's not because they thought they were going to become sterile. It's because they just didn't think it was going to affect them or they didn't get around to it. Well, Delta is kicking the young people's butts. It's time to get it done.
So can't be any clearer than that. He says that's not the only new issue. Of course, as we've been reporting, that pregnancies are now more at risk. We're seeing more deaths in pregnant women and as well as their babies dying. It's really some sad stories that he shared with me. Yeah. And on the overall picture on where we stand as far as addressing this and being able to keep up with people who are ending up in the hospital, he says our medical supplies look good at the moment. But as we've been reporting, staffing is a major issue. And I want to share some numbers with you. I had not heard this particular way of framing this as far as their efforts to try to get more medical staff. Usually they'll pay like really large amounts of money to bring people in from out of state, something like that. But he says even that's not working.
That used to always be the solution. You know, if we just pay people a little bit more, we give them double time, we give them overtime. We bring in a traveler at, you know, an exorbitant rate. We can find people. We can't find people now. And it's not any single system in the state. It is across the state. You know, you see organizations offering 13-week contracts, you know, to traveling nurses at $160 an hour. Some are offering $20,000 sign-on bonuses for a 12 or 24-month contract. So, you know, huge incentives, and those are still out there. They're still not getting filled. So if you have a passion to go into nursing right now, it's a great time to go. We need you on the front lines with us. And if we don't figure out how to get this under control, I worry that in 18 or 24 months when you're going to be out of school, we're still going to be battling them.
So 18 to 24 months could still be here. But can you imagine those contracts, that money, and people are just burnt. They just don't want to. They're not going to.
I was just posting a long thread on Twitter about the nurse just I happened to talk to at a park because our kids were around the same age and you tend to, you know, gravitate towards the parents that your kids are playing together. And she's a COVID ward nurse locally. And I told her, I was like, listen, I work for the news, and it didn't stop her from, you know, just telling me what it's like inside her hospital, that so many of her coworkers are gone because of burnout, stress, or just trauma from, and just this last week, she was there to watch a pregnant, unvaccinated pregnant mother die. Yeah. I didn't ask about the baby because she seemed already traumatized enough talking about it. She just needed to talk. But yeah, our healthcare system is starting to break down because we are humans being exposed to mass trauma day after day after day for months on end. Of course, we're going to burn out and have to, I just burned out in July and took the whole month off. So, and I don't work in a hospital. I work in the news, you know, so my stress pales in comparison to hers. This is a true emergency, and vaccinations are going to stop hospitals from being overwhelmed.
That, yeah, absolutely. And look, there's some big concerns right now about, I've talked about this before, as has Dr. Schlicker, that what, right now Delta accounts for, I believe it's somewhere in the area of 95% of the cases we see in the state. There are other new variants out there. There are other new variants in our state. This Delta is right now the predominant one. But if that should change, and as we get more vaccine escape is what they call it, where the vaccine isn't working as much on that particular variant, there is a fear, not just here in our state, but we are hearing it from the CDC, all of the top medical officials in the country now saying that they believe at some point it's inevitable that there's going to be a variant that this vaccine doesn't work on. Yeah. And so you've got Pfizer saying that they'll be able to quickly get another vaccine going. But do we want to go through that process again?
Give me a booster shot. Give me another, you know, anything to stop this virus, because we did it with the flu. They, you know, put their best guess into the flu shot every year of what strains are going to be around. We're eventually going to get there with this coronavirus where we just have to keep fighting it.
Yeah. So we're, it really quick, want to say we're also just steps away from where they're going to possibly have to start shutting down certain medical doctor's appointments, things like that in some areas. So that's another reason, because he says it may be the car accident that you don't necessarily die from what happened in the car accident, but because you can't get medical care is going to be where we start to end up.
Very important to know. Thank you, Hannah.
You bet.
It's time for your daily dose of kindness now, sponsored by Heritage Homecraft. An 18-year-old boy from Colorado dealing with life-threatening epilepsy spent a day at a UPS sorting facility. His parents say it was the best day of his life, all thanks to a UPS driver who befriended him. Nicole Lambert, Caleb's mother, tells KDVR-TV.
He would see them driving down the road, and they're very recognizable. Those are some of the first things he said as we would point to the letters UPS.
That is where UPS driver David Weingart comes in.
I was actually delivering to Caleb's house, and I saw him outside playing. He said, "I like your truck." So we started talking and got to be friends from that point.
They became friends. Weingart would visit often and gave Caleb a tour of the UPS facility last May. Weingart is familiar with Caleb's condition. His own son, Cayman, had similar challenges.
He was having seizures during sleep.
The last seizure Cayman took his life. It was on May 31st of 2020.
I met Caleb September of 2019, and I know that he came into my life for a very special reason. Mm.
Weingart feels meeting Caleb was not just by chance.
It happened for a very specific reason, and at that time, you don't know what that reason is.
And now he says he does. Weingart is now retired from UPS and will not be driving the big brown truck by Caleb's house anymore, but I have a feeling that won't really change a thing about their friendship. Dave Ross, he's spreading drive-by wisdom to the masses
one listener at a time.
The crusader of common sense.
It's Dave Ross.
Ross.
That bears no resemblance to what my show intro was like.
Not at all.
Why? Why is it so strange yet so good to hear your voice, Dave? Welcome back to the show.
Beats me, but I'm just glad all the equipment works. Is that what we're doing just to make sure that when I do come back, everything will work properly?
In truth, G. Scott couldn't join us, so we woke you up and said you need to go live with us
right
now. Second
choice. That's fine.
We just wanted to see if all of your equipment is actually working.
Well, that is an interesting, interesting. I actually will be seeing a licensed physician later on today to get one of the many checkups I've been through. But so far, so good. Walking a mile a day, walking up and down stairs. I never thought that would be counted as a significant physical accomplishment, but these days. Well, you knew that, Chris, right? I mean, you've been through something like this.
Oh, yeah, but nothing like that. I mean, yeah. I mean, they haven't pulled my chest apart and stopped my heart.
We don't, we don't need to remind me of that, do we?
No, let us, please. I have so many questions to get through in so little time, including what was it like to have your chest cracked open and your heart stopped? Did you have visions?
I had visions going in because, of course, I'd read up on it. But basically, as they wheeled me in, the last thing I remember is the nurses saying, you know, we really need to shave this beard off because we're about to open his chest.
No, not the COVID beard. It's Heather. I can't stand that thought. Yeah. No COVID beard.
It's gone. So the last thing I remember as the anesthetic was kicking in was a couple of attendants with scissors saying, okay, we'll leave the mustache. And then I lost consciousness and woke up in the ICU. I have no memory of it, which is by design. But for a while now, I felt like I'm wearing a corset. I've never worn one, but this must be what it feels like because, you know, it was difficult to inhale all the way. It was difficult to just walk because, as explained to me, it takes a lot of energy for your body to heal from something this extensive. But it is healing, I can tell you that. I feel
that's so
a lot
great.
Better than I did 2 weeks ago.
You sound
and when
good.
When people hear that you had heart surgery, they go, Dave, right, he's the healthiest guy I know. We've been listening for 43 years. People have to understand this wasn't like a heart attack situation.
No.
It was a cyst, correct, on your
it
heart?
It was called a cavernous hemangioma. And what it is a mass of blood vessels, like a tumor, but a benign tumor, that had grown in the right atrium of the heart and was causing irregular heartbeats. A lot of people get these. They're pretty common, and I'd had them for years. But one day I went in for a stress test, and they noticed something that was abnormal, and then they gave me the angiogram, which yielded a glorious full-color 3D X-ray picture of this cocktail olive sitting inside the heart, which apparently is not a good thing. And they said, unfortunately, we're going to have to take this out. And there's no easy way to do it except to go under the hood. And I said, okay, you're the experts. I mean, I had three surgeons plus Dr. Cohen consulting on this.
Dr. Cohen was very protective over you, Dave, and for good reason.
He was, in fact. And so, but he reassured me this is done like 500,000 times each year. And yes, it is possible to restart the heart. I'm living proof of that. And so here it is. And my intention is to get back to actually to better than full strength, since one of the things they found was a blockage in one of the heart arteries as well, which they also bypass. As long as you're in there, I figure, you know, change the spark plugs too. So
fix it up, sure. So now your heart is brand new again.
I wouldn't say that. It's still about 69 years old, but it seems to be functioning better than before.
Just remember, scars, yes, we're all happy. And remember, scars are cool.
Yeah, so they tell me. Although the surgeon was actually very proud. He says it's one of the straightest chest scars he's ever done.
Very nice.
Some of my friends and I, we had competitions over our C-section scars. So we would tell our doctors, hey, my friend's is beautiful. Can you make mine even better? So now you can compare scars with your friends.
Yes. Please invite me over to your next scar party. I'm sure. I bet I have you beat.
Let's see it. No, I'm kidding. I won't make you open your shirt. But it is good to hear your voice. And you had so many people concerned. And darn you for not telling anyone why you were leaving. You scared a lot of people when you weren't on air for a few weeks.
Well, I didn't really know what the outcome was going to be. And maybe it's a little bit of superstition. But plus, I needed some time off. And I've never taken this much time off. And it's, you know, actually not bad. I woke up, 20 minutes ago. And, you know, that's great.
The headline, you Dave, know, Dave Ross goes to great lengths to get time off. Don't do that anymore.
Plus, I get to take a nap after I'm done with you. So life is good.
No, I fully support it. You know, I had just taken that month of July off to get my mental health straight. And right before my return, I get a phone call. So your co-host is having heart surgery. So actually, I support you taking that time off.
This is the first time that we have talked directly with each other since when?
June, since right before your
July,
surgery,
whatever it was. I mean,
yeah, but also June time. On the show. Yeah. So
it's a good time for you to have taken off, Dave. There's very little news in the world for you to wear your rose colored glasses on and to give us your perspective. It's been pretty quiet.
I'm getting all these videos from my New York relatives about waterfalls in the subway. It looks like the apocalypse back there.
Do you see the swimming rat too?
No,
it makes our
that's
volcano
just normal.
They know how to swim now. Good grief.
Well, Dave, I know we're going to hear more of you, you know, as the weeks go on, but please take your time. As I told you right before the surgery, we'll hold down the fort for you as long as you
Thank
need.
You.
We just need you healthy and back to yourself. So please take the time, rest, and we'll be here when you need us.
That's very kind. And just keep on keeping on. And I'm keeping the equipment dusted off, and I should be ready soon.
All right. All right. Sounds good.
Hang in
love
there,
you,
Dave.
All right.
All right. Bye. A record number of overdoses in King County so far this year. Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott reports.
217 overdose deaths in King County so far in 2021. That number already dramatically higher than the 172 overdose deaths the county saw in all of last year. And there's still 4 months of this year left to go. UW Medicine researcher Dr. Caleb Banta-Green says the region's overdoses are being fueled by the influx of synthetic fentanyl on our streets.
This is illicitly made, it's illegally made, and being sold in the illicit drug market. And it's usually made to look like pills, so it has this image of safety. But it is profoundly strong, and has very, very high risk for both addiction and overdose. And it's really just flooding the market is a very, very inexpensive way to get high.
Here's how bad it is in the market.
If you didn't get that pill from a pharmacy, it is 99% likely to be fentanyl, and there's no way for you to tell.
And we're not just talking about walking around on the street to buy it.
There's a lot more purchasing via online mechanisms, via Snapchat and other ways that don't rely on a person having to go out on the street and buy it from an unknown person. There's a lot more person-to-person via, you know, electronic communication. And that just means that anybody can get it anywhere, anytime.
And this drug, more addictive, more dangerous.
We've never seen this quick escalation on the order of weeks to months, as opposed to many years, between first using, liking it, and becoming addicted to it. And we're seeing it compressed into the order of months with young adults, often as young as 15 or 16.
And right now, risk is higher than ever.
If you think about the things that are risk factors for using opioids are stress and trauma. If you think about things that are risk factors for dying from an overdose, it's using alone in isolation. And those things are emblematic of really what we're seeing with COVID. So these things absolutely can sort of intersect and magnify the problems that we'd see with one or the other.
And he says part of fighting that is going to be ending the stigma associated with drug use.
I encourage people to step back, try not to be judgmental, recognize most of us use some type of substance for some purpose in our life. And this is a substance that people may be addicted to that is causing harm to them and other people, but the vast majority of people don't want to be using. They want to reduce their use. They want to stop their use, but they're not currently able to access services. And part of that might also be that when they do ask for help from friends and family, there's a lot of shame and stigma that kind of pushes them back into the shadows.
That is Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott reporting.
This is Seattle's Morning News. This is Dave Ross. As you may have heard, a judge has approved a settlement with the Sackler family over their company, Purdue Pharma's, involvement in the opioid epidemic. Washington Attorney General Bob Ferguson's on the line, and from what I read, you are not happy with this settlement. Why not?
Yeah, that's an understatement, Dave. I'm extremely dissatisfied with a resolution that is, frankly, legally and morally bankrupt because, frankly, it's not enough money, given the harm that this family and this company caused. And number two, what the Sackler family is doing is buying a legal shield for life. So just so your listeners know, what this means is the judge is saying nobody, no individual, no state attorney general, can sue the Sackler family civilly for their involvement in the opioid epidemic and the harm that they caused. That's outrageous. That's buying justice. And that's not how it works.
So is there evidence that they personally knew the way their products were being abused by patients and by doctors who apparently overprescribed them?
Yes. In fact, even during the testimony during this bankruptcy proceeding, the judge even acknowledged that there was evidence to that effect. And in fact, the Sacklers would face probably more exposure in future litigation if taken to trial than they're paying as a result of this resolution. So, yes, there's plenty of evidence that they were personally involved. It's a closely held corporation. Sackler family members serve on the board of directors. They make decisions. They're involved in the day-to-day operations and would be facing significant legal exposure and financial exposure if someone could take them to trial. They pulled out $11 to $12 billion from the company in recent years, stashed it in overseas accounts, and the returns on those significant billions of dollars will literally leave them wealthier at the end of this process than they are today. And that is truly outrageous.
Okay. Is there a risk that in your desire to punish them even further, we could lose the whole thing? I mean, how much money does Washington State stand to get from the settlement?
Yeah, so Washington stands to receive about $65 million over about 10 years. And is there a risk in appealing? Yes. Is there a risk in everything in life? Yes. But for me, it can't be a system of justice in our country that is, for one, for the Sackler family, because they're billionaires and they can buy their way out of any legal exposure, and a different justice system for everybody who's listening to this conversation, who does not have billions of dollars. That's not how it works. Keep in mind, Dave, they were not going through bankruptcy. The company was going through bankruptcy. They simply piggybacked on the bankruptcy, tossed in a few billion dollars, and the judge is giving them this legal shield for life because they insisted on it. That's not the way it's supposed to work, and that principle is an important one to appeal.
Okay, now assuming that we do end up getting some money out of this, is that money going to be earmarked for a specific purpose? And I bring it up because I remember after the tobacco settlement, well, for a while it was being used, I guess, for anti-tobacco education. Mm-hmm. But then at some point, the money was diverted to other funds. So what's the guarantee that if we get this money, it's used for the intended purpose?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked about that, because you're right. With the tobacco resolution, only a fraction of those dollars actually went for prevention of getting people addicted to tobacco. In the cases that we have related to the opioid epidemic, and this is just one of many, we go to trial against three Fortune 15 companies here in King County Superior Court in just 10 weeks. In all these cases, if the state receives a verdict or a settlement, I've made it very clear we're going to specifically earmark all of those dollars to put into funds for treatment and prevention and abatement for all the harms that have resulted from the opioid epidemic. That is where I'm going to make sure that all those dollars go there.
Okay, looking ahead, has this episode served to warn other companies who might find themselves in a similar situation? Are there controls in place now that some future drug, whatever it might be, there are early warning signs that it's being abused and that this can be nipped in the bud before it goes as far as this epidemic did?
Dave, that's a good question. I wish I could put a positive spin on this and say the answer is yes, but I don't think so. In fact, I think the answer is the opposite, that the message to companies is, hey, you know what? If you've got enough billions of dollars, you can get to the right bankruptcy judge and you can, frankly, with enough money, buy off total freedom from any potential legal liability, which is exactly what this family has done. So I think in some ways, the message from this plan being approved is exactly the opposite of the message you want to send, which is, hey, if you break the law, you're going to be hauled into court and you will be found liable and pay everything all of your ill-gotten gains, you'll have to pay back. That is definitely not happening here. So unfortunately, right now, I'd say the message is precisely the reverse.
But under this settlement, they would lose their company. I mean, they'd keep their fortune, but they'd lose control of the company, right?
Well, fair enough. I mean, their company is going under, but the family, right, the folks who profited from this. And again, they moved $11 to $12 billion out of the company in recent years once they saw the litigation coming and stashed it in overseas accounts. So there's no part of this deal that does any justice for the Sackler families. The company's going under after all these years, but they've made their billions of dollars. I don't think they're particularly sorry to see it go. They've made their billions, and now they've washed their hands of the whole thing. And by the way, I should add, David, they are not apologizing. There's no accountability. They were asked to apologize. They would not. Even the judge expressed surprise at how low the settlement in terms of dollars was. he said he expected to be more money. And number two, that there was not even so much as an apology to all the victims here in Washington State and all across the country.
Okay, so what's the next step when we find out what happens next?
Well, what it will depend is how many states file an appeal and whether the Department of Justice appeals. We've already filed our notice of appeal. We did that as soon as the judge was done speaking. Connecticut, which is where Purdue Pharmaceutical is headquartered, is joining with us. So there will be a group of states who appeal, and I think it's entirely likely that the Department of Justice will join us. And then that appeal, of course, will take time to work its way through the courts. But the bottom line, I think, Dave, is that this case, I think, has a very good chance of ending up at the U.S. Supreme Court, because this issue of individuals who are not part of a bankruptcy being able to graft onto the bankruptcy, pay some money, and get total legal immunity is a very, very important issue. And I think it's one that the U.S. Supreme Court would be likely to take as a case down the road.
Washington State Attorney General Bob Ferguson. Bob, thank you.
Hey, thank you, Dave.
Let's go!
Time for Choke Points now. Catching a ferry on Labor Day weekend. It's never been an easy task, has it? But it's one of the busiest weekends of the year, and now we add in the pandemic, some crew shortages, and potential protests on this Labor Day weekend, and the ferry system could get a lot worse. Chris, what do we need to know?
Well, we need to know that the Washington State ferries, they don't sail if they don't have the right amount of crew or the enough crew to run those boats. And we've been seeing that a lot over the last couple of years, and we've seen it acutely in the last couple of months, actually, because there just aren't enough people to staff the boats anymore. There's a huge global maritime worker shortage as well. There's the aging workforce as well. I mean, to be a captain, you have to put in at least 20 years, and some of those guys and gals are getting a little older. So we've had issues with that. I mean, again, and it's not necessarily just because of the pandemic. That's made things worse, because when we only have skeleton crews to run the boats and then one of them gets COVID or something like that, you have contact tracing, quarantine. Last couple of months have been rough.
It's demoralizing for our ferry crews who have been out there every single day of the pandemic making these boats go back and forth. And it's a big inconvenience for our customers.
The ferry system's Ian Sterling wants riders to be prepared for potential disruptions over this Labor Day holiday. There are about 450 daily sailings on the schedule, and the long-term staffing issues and COVID impacts have taken a toll.
The number of round-trip sailings that we've missed in the neighborhood of about 130, 150 just since February 1st, and they're accelerating. As I say, the last few weekends have been particularly painful.
So the ferry service has preemptively cut back the last sailings of the day of several routes over this holiday weekend so they can keep as much available crew for the busier times of day. So Sterling says that should impact your planning.
I wouldn't be avoiding state ferries this weekend, but I would definitely have alternate plans for how I'm going to get home and maybe have a bit of flexibility, right? Plan for maybe taking a different sailing than you intended, that type of a thing. Know where you're going to spend the night if you say you go to the San Juan Islands.
And there are rumors flying around that some ferry workers might stage a sick out over the holiday weekend to protest Governor Inslee's vaccine requirement. Ferry workers fall under that umbrella. They have until October 18th to get vaccinated or face losing their jobs. A lot of workers are upset about that in the ferry service. Sterling says ferry managers and the unions representing those workers believe that a sick out is illegal, and they hope it won't happen.
There are other ways that you can get your viewpoints across that don't, leave your coworkers in the lurch trying to fill your job and also inconvenience thousands of customers potentially. So there's that out there. At this point in time, they're just rumors, and we hope that they stay that way.
You know, so, Sully, we see a lot of protests around here. And in my experience, and probably yours too, you can confirm if I'm right, protests that interrupt somebody's commute, whether it be on the road blocking the freeway, downtown Seattle blocking an intersection, on a ferry blocking you from getting to your vacation, you don't gain sympathy by blocking somebody's commute.
Yeah, you don't get a lot of patience from when you're interrupting people getting where they need to go, especially right. On a weekend where they've made plans. Maybe they've put some money aside to rent a nice place for the weekend, things like that. Then they're stuck. Yeah, so you're right. It's not necessarily the best way to get points for your cause, but it is a rather effective way to make a point potentially. So we'll see if that happens. We're hoping that it doesn't. And then just to add a little bit more pain to the ferry mix, the Seattle Bremerton run is going to be down to just one boat starting Tuesday after the holiday. The Caliton is going into dry dock for scheduled maintenance and repairs. So the pain on the ferry system continues, and this weekend could be interesting. So plan ahead.
What does that mean? 2 hours, 3 hours, 4? What does plan ahead mean? I've found that if I'm traveling by ferry or just anywhere, I take, so if I want to take a 4-day vacation, I'll add an extra day on there with no expectations other than commuting, because there's nothing worse than starting your vacation day of and wasting most of it to the commute.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, you try to maybe take a different sailing than you would, pad in enough time where you might have a 2-hour wait at the dock. I mean, that's not unusual for a holiday weekend, especially coming back on Monday. You know, maybe take an extra day, come back Tuesday to add on. You know, you might save yourself a little bit. But yeah, it's been difficult. And yeah, 2-3 hour waits have not been unusual, as you've reported in the news that they've stopped taking reservations on some of the routes as well. So it could be a dicey weekend if your plans involve a ferry.
I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News.
You can hear us live every morning on 97.3 FM or subscribe to this podcast and you'll never miss the show.